From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of August 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. And a bit later in the program, the folks from the Andersons right here in Champaign County will join us to talk about the cash grain situation and the changes in Friday's USDA report as it relates to corn and soybeans. Along the way, we'll take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon and update you on the weather forecast with Mark Russo. He's at Brisk Pulse in Chicago right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's turn our attention now to what happened at the CME Group in Chicago. Kurt Kimmel is here. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, better here today than on Friday, although there's a lot of things to talk about Friday after those USDA reports were released. Soybeans were down about 40 cents. They managed to gain some of that back today. Just a bounce, or are there other reasons?
Well, yeah, that's the thing is early selling pressure last night, even this morning, and it kind of put beans in a defensive posture, and as we kind of got into the day session, we saw spread activity pick up, buying beans, selling corn, buying beans, selling wheat, and it kind of caught ground in there. But when we kind of sit back and look at the big picture here, I think the market might have gotten ahead of itself a little bit. The market went down and, you know, took out some support levels and got a little oversold and was able to catch a sell of to Mexico, sold 142,000 tons of Mexico export inspections report. We shipped out 850 million metric tons, so export shipments were fairly good. And it was enough to maybe, well, maybe we've taken enough out of the bean market and see a little recovery. Also, too, this afternoon, the crop conditions reports expected to show a little bit of deterioration again, mainly in the central part of the growing regions here. Even though we got high yield expectations, if we don't see these rains materialize here midweek, maybe we might be just a little bit too rich on that. So as far as a big up and through here, we'll see how it unfolds. We had the technical picture kind of come in at a real good turn as far as making a new low, closing higher. We had a hook reversal up. Also, too, we kind of held this mid-850 area. Then also, when you look at the timing on it, it looks like these beans have been trying to bottom about every 4 weeks, give or take just a little bit, and the timing was kind of perfect on it. And when you look at the daily chart on the November bean futures, it appears we're trying to carve out a little bit of a head and shoulders bottom formation. So if we can follow through on this hook reversal to the upside through here, it sort of puts the market in a position maybe to take a run back up and challenge that $9 level, Todd.
USDA put yields across the United States at 178.4 for corn, 51.6 for soybeans. In the state of Illinois, record yields well above 206 bushel to well above 200 bushel the acre. I think it was 206 or 7 for Illinois, and the soybean number was just phenomenal. Did producers call you and say, hey, wait a second, I don't know whether we can make that or not?
Well, on the corn, they did. We're finding more and more situations where the moisture was a little bit on the light side. Guys are physically actually going in the field and taking a look at it and, you know, concerned about kernel depth more than anything. Population seems to be fairly good, but just not up to expectations compared to a year ago. You know, the guys had 240. 250 last year. They're looking at, 220, 215 this year. I mean, it's not a disaster by all means. We're still going to have a good crop, but just not up to last year. Now, when you take the areas that we're hearing from and you try to get the average to go up, that might be a difficult task. far as the state of Illinois. In order to have that type of yield for the state of Illinois, we just got to have everybody experiencing the best crop ever, and I don't know if that's the case. Beans, however, is a different story. Guys looking at beans are saying these beans are loaded with pods. A little bit of moisture on them. This bean crop could be up to that 51.8 or maybe 52 if these pods go ahead and fill on out. So it's kind of a mixed bag. Bean yield is probably there. The corn might be just a little rich at this time.
Are you of a mind like the Commodity Week crew was on Friday afternoon? And folks can go back and listen to that. It's up on the website at willag.org, that producers might consider going ahead and selling corn this fall, maybe buying back if they think it's going to go up in price, and trying to store the soybeans simply because there may be a better price later on?
Well, that's a good question. That's going to vary from operation to operation. It's going to depend on your cash flow needs and which on-farm, off-farm storage, which way you want to do it. But there are ideas that beans could have a fall rally in through here due to the fact that once we get into the midterm elections that maybe China will come on and step forward here and gather some coverage. So they would have something to ship during that January, February, March time window before the South American beans come online. I think you just got to kind of look at where we're at and just do your own thing on the farm instead of taking advice from somebody that is kind of speculating on what's going to gain on what. But I believe a cash replacement strategy in general is ideal at these lower levels. I feel that, like last year, move the cash grains, save the storage, and try to capture 20 to 30 cents to the upside. When you save the storage and capture 20, 30 cents to the upside, it adds anywhere from 40 to 50 cents to your bottom line, and that helps keep you in business.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Talk to you again in 1 week.
Very good.
And, of course, is Kurt Kimmel. He is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, last week's verdict against Monsanto could give others momentum in legal cases. A stunning verdict Friday could be just the beginning for Monsanto's legal woes. A California jury in a state court in San Francisco found that the company's products containing the weed killer glyphosate were responsible for a former groundskeeper's diagnosis of non-Hodgkin lymphoma. That's a cancer of the lymph system. Even if the damages are later lowered or an appellate court overturns the verdict, the decision is not a good sign for Monsanto or its soon-to-be parent company, Bayer, which is paying $66 billion to purchase the company. The case of the groundskeeper, Dwayne Johnson, was sped up because his diagnosis is terminal, but there are more trials coming. Patients in several state court lawsuits and a federal multi-district litigation diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma say the herbicide in Monsanto's flagship product Roundup carries a cancer risk that the company did not warn consumers about. Monsanto said in a statement that it would appeal. The company has repeatedly argued that there is no credible scientific evidence linking glyphosate to cancer in humans. Let's stay with glyphosate but switch hemispheres. A Brazilian judge has suspended the use of products containing glyphosate. The federal judge halted new registrations of products containing glyphosate and will suspend existing registrations while the Brazilian government reevaluates the toxicity of glyphosate products. That, according to Reuters, the decision, however, could face several appeals. Brazil's public health agency, as well as the agriculture ministry, have announced plans to file appeals. Herbicide manufacturers contend that Brazil's farmers have been safely using glyphosate for more than 40 years. A Brazil-based agribusiness industry association representative says he thinks the judge is wrong, adding that the industry believes the decision will be revoked somehow. Without glyphosate products, the industry contends it's impossible to do agriculture. Brazil is the world's largest exporter of soybeans, driven largely by growing demand from China. Let's stay with pesticides for just a moment. A U.S. appeals court ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to ban chlorpyrifos within 60 days. The decision by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit reverses a Trump administration reversal of an Obama administration plan to impose a ban. Chlorpyrifos is used on cotton, corn, almonds, and fruit trees, including oranges, bananas, and apples, to kill worms and insects. The pesticide has been linked to learning disabilities in children that, according to the Hagstrom Report, EPA previously in 2000 banned household use of chlorpyrifos over concerns the pesticide can harm the brain and nervous system. The Environmental Working Group, otherwise known as EWG, calls the decision a huge victory for public health. Meanwhile, CropLife America expressed disappointment with the decision and is hopeful EPA will consider all avenues of appeal after review of the decision. On the subject of the Trump administration, a poll by Farm Futures shows support to Donald Trump from farmers is slipping. The survey found that 60% of farmers would vote for the president if the election were held today. That's down from the 75% support level Trump received from growers in the 2016 election. Meanwhile, 24% said they would not vote for re-election, and 17% were unsure. 78% of those who voted for the president in 2016 said they would still vote for him today. Trade policy appears to be the biggest sticking point, as farmers and ranchers have applauded much of Trump's policy moves. 86% of those surveyed said Trump's moves to reduce regulation is good for their farm. Even 42% of Clinton voters backed the president on that effort. However, just 8% of farmers supported Trump's claim that trade wars are good and easy to win. Farm Futures surveyed 924 growers from July 20th to August 2nd. Farmers were invited by email to fill out an online questionnaire. And finally today, we'll stick with exports but move back here to the United States, where USDA on Friday said soybean exports may be below last year, but that U.S. corn is surging ahead of a year ago. Gary Crawford has more.
With all of the tariffs and the changing global agricultural product trade situations,
it's just an unfamiliar pattern of trade right now,
making any forecast about U.S. farm commodity exports fairly tentative and difficult to make. This from Agriculture Department Outlook Chairman Seth Meyer. And of course, we do have what's already happened in the first 9 months of this fiscal year. And of course, soybean export values and volumes are down from a year ago. But for corn,
exports have been quite strong.
And for a couple of reasons.
South American shifting of what they're exporting in transit and problems elsewhere in the world in terms of their corn production. So we've seen some pretty good export strength for the U.S. corn as well, too, so far this season.
And for the first 9 months of this fiscal year through June, the U.S. has shipped 45.6 million metric tons of corn to other countries, 4% more than last year. That corn bringing in just over $8 billion, 5% more than the same time frame a year ago. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
And I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. That wraps up the Ag News for this Monday afternoon. Now up next, Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue has announced another big reorganization at the Department of Agriculture. Perdue will realign USDA's Economic Research Service that reports on ag trends with the Office of the Chief Economist that looks at policy impacts and the Office of the Secretary. Intended as an efficiency and budget-saving move, Perdue also plans to relocate most of the 700 ERS and National Institute of Food and Agriculture employees outside the National Capital Region by the end of next year. USDA officials were not immediately available to comment, but American Farm Bureau's Dale Moore stressed in June the need for USDA to work with Congress on even more sweeping plans.
The nutrition programs, are huge programs, plus there's a whole administrative interconnect with all of the states. So yes, Congress is going to have a strong voice in this.
And while realigning ERS with the Chief Economist Office may be less disruptive than a White House proposal to move food stamps out of USDA, lawmakers may want to look at a big move of employees outside of D.C.
When you look at it from the executive branch end, one could see how there might be some concern there. But when you look at it from Congress's standpoint, again, it goes back to the executive branch collaborating with with the legislative branch.
Secretary Perdue says one goal is to place key USDA resources closer to stakeholders, most of whom live and work far from D.C., but also to attract and retain skilled staff, harder to find in D.C. because of the high cost of living. Another is to save on employment costs and rent. New office locations haven't been found yet, but current employees will be able to keep their jobs if they agree to relocate with salaries based on local rates. The other choice, except retirement and separations incentives. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. Greg Johnson is now here from the Andersons to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Greg. Thanks for being with us. Tell me about your reaction Friday and then what happened today in the marketplace.
Well, the corn numbers were a little higher than what we were anticipating. Not much. I mean, you can quibble about whether Illinois is at 204 or 207, but it's a record yield. I think we would probably all agree that Illinois' corn crop is far enough along that it's going to be hard to hurt it too much for the rest of the way out, even with some dry weather. It's the soybeans that really took us by surprise. Not saying that we don't have a good crop and maybe even a record crop, but USDA is using 64 bushels an acre for the state of Illinois, and I think the previous record was 59. So not only are they using a record yield, but a record yield by 5 bushels an acre. So that one is the is a surprising number, and obviously if they did that to Illinois, they did that to other states as well, and so beans were down 42 cents on Friday as a result of that, and we're down another 10 cents this morning until we finally, you know, saw some support, some bottom picking coming in, and finished the beans higher today, so that's a good sign, but we've got a lot of ground to make up.
It just ran out of sellers, I take it, and finally bounced.
I think so. There's a lot of uncertainty about how the Trump $12 billion aid package is going to play out. We don't get details until around Labor Day. And so it seems like we've heard a lot of farmers don't want to sell too much because it may be based on, you know, when you sell. If you sell something before the program details are announced, that may not qualify. So the last thing you want to do is sell beans at these prices and not have the, you know, not be qualified for the aid package. So farmer selling is has really slowed up here at these lower prices, and I guess I don't, you know, it's hard to argue that, you know, you might as well wait and see what happens, I guess, at this point.
Now, what are your bids for the day?
Okay, cash corn tonight is 336 for the old crop corn, 342 for new crop corn. Old crop and new crop beans are all the same price at 834, and wheat is 535.
Hey, thanks so much, Greg.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with the Andersons. This is the Closing Market Report for a Monday afternoon. John Davis now joins us to take a look at the weather forecast. He's with Risk Pulse in Chicago. Good afternoon, John. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be here.
Hey, so let's start here in the Midwest. I'm a little worried, I think, about some of the areas in Iowa that haven't had rain for a while. What can you tell me about those places?
Yeah, well, that is the southern one-third of Iowa, and it doesn't look good over the next couple of days. But by the end of the week, over the weekend, and early next week, it looks like they have a pretty good opportunity for getting some rains during that time frame. And northern Iowa doesn't look as good, but they don't need the rains right now. But southern Iowa, northern Missouri, which lately has been the epicenter of some of the dry areas across the Midwest, it looks like they do have a good opportunity, not only the next 5 or 6 days, but also through much of next week.
Much heat in the Corn Belt at all?
No, one of the things that's going to happen coming up is that all the heat is going to be, you know, positioned well north, up in the Dakotas and Montana, portions of the prairies. And it's almost like too much cloud cover and showers to limit any kind of real heat from developing and, you know, evolving across the Midwest. So the temperatures may end up being a little bit above normal, but they're not extreme, they're not record-setting, and certainly nothing unusual for this time of year.
I'll turn your attention to Europe, where they have had some dry conditions to deal with, both early season and late season.
Yeah, extreme dryness, kind of in what we think of the corners, the northwest portion of Europe, the southeast portion of Europe, and really both areas continue to have issues, not only with dryness, but also with warmer-than-normal temperatures right through the end of this month. So the European problems continue across much of the continent.
China's growing season has been uneventful or not?
Well, uneventful from a standpoint of no major drought conditions across the region. They have, however, had bouts of heat, and those bouts of heat have been across the northern portion of China, kind of one of their main corn and soybean growing areas. So if they do have any crop issues, they're heat related across those regions because they really haven't had much dryness across those areas, not only the last 2 or 3 weeks, but much of this season.
And finally, Australia continues to suffer under severe drought.
Yeah, and that continues as well. And overall, across East Australia especially, there's no sign of any fundamental change in the pattern that would bring beneficial rains to those areas of East Australia. So as they begin to approach the key spring period, conditions show no signs of improvement whatsoever.
Thanks so much, John.
My pleasure, Todd.
John Davis is with RisPulse in Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. Tomorrow, I'll come to you from the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield for this program. Be sure to tune in then. On Thursday of this week, I'll be hosting Agronomy Day here on the Urbana-Champaign campus at the U of I. That's on the South Farms on First Street, so just head straight south from the State Farm Center. The Assembly Hall there on First Street, and you'll find it on the east side of the road. It's easy to get to. We open our doors at 7 a.m. and we'll have a noon lunch. That'll be a small cost, so bring a little cash with you. Should be a great day, and we hope to see you out there. And the 21st, that's the talk show from Illinois Public Media. We'll be on the State Fairgrounds that day, and they'll broadcast live from the fairgrounds on Thursday at 11 o'clock. So lots happening this week. Be sure to catch up with us on our website at willag.org for all the details. I'm Todd Gleason.